You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd.
You know, unless you're a Falcons fan.
Yeah. So
different kind of ball.
So you know, this is episode 99. I got 99 problems, but a podcast ain't one. What's going on there, Brad?
Oh, what was that?
What are we smoking this week?
It's like, what was that? It's like, you want me to talk about ball, or you want me to talk about cigars? You want to? We're on episode 99.
Just gonna bunt and play it as it lays.
All right. You know, I'm gonna make a sacrifice play, and back to you.
Yeah. So this week we're, you know, it's almost World Series time, and we're gonna talk about baseball movies. We got, you know, about a month out from the World Series. Our Braves just made it to the playoffs. Hopefully they won't suck. But
yeah,
you know,
Falcons.
It's the end of the season, so there's plenty of time for them to fuck it up. But so yeah, we thought about the time. Talked about we don't really cover sports a lot here, but we do watch movies. So let's talk about some sports movies. And to go along with that, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we are smoking a cigar that is also from a movie called Dogma. Okay, we're not talking about the movie Dogma. We're smoking this cigar called Dogma. This is kind of a unique cigar. This particular cigar used to be blended specifically for a particular shop, and unfortunately it wasn't the shop that we were familiar with, but
yes, if anyone's familiar with the website Cigar Dojo, this was the, you know, Drew Estate's Undercrown Dojo commemorative edition cigar, and when it first came out you could only get it through them or through a certain online retailer, but since then, they've decided to make it a wide release, and now it's available in a lot more locations. So if you're not, you know, from South Florida, you now can enjoy a Dogma of your own.
As long as it's in stock, because apparently in South Florida, there's weird laws about advertising and importing tobacco.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. Kind of crazy. I don't know all the details. I just caught little snippets, and I was like,
"It's Florida, man." That's why every weird story you see on the news starts with "Florida, man," because the whole state is.
That sounds about right. All right, so a little bit of a tangent. Back at the topic of hand, this cigar is going to sport a Mexican San Andreas wrapper, a Connecticut stalk cut Habano binder, and Nicaraguan and Brazilian Matafina feelers. And this is a 6x56 box-pressed Fatola.
I do like a good box press. That always, you know, just, I don't know, the just kind of feels good, you know, smoking a box press.
A box press, as long as I feel like a 60-ring gauge, I can't cut a 60-ring gauge box press.
Yeah, not unless you have one of the XO cutters. Yeah, normally
it's
like...
not necessarily about the cutter, but the mouthfeel just doesn't quite... I find that, you know, me personally, if I've got a box press 60-ring gauge, I like a punch.
Yeah, that's normally what I would use because they wouldn't fit the old, like, standard Zycar cutters, but they'll fit in the XO, but I still do kind of like a punch. Yeah, it's like trying to stick it in a regular cutter is like sticking a square peg in a round hole. It just doesn't work out for you very well.
Yeah, so, you know, back to talking more about the cigar. To me, not so spicy, very earthy. I would say maybe, you know, rich is a description I would use here.
Yeah, rich flavors of chocolate, coffee, and sweet vanilla finish. And it's also like, you know... On the full strength side of things, which we're, you know, just lit up, so hasn't hit us yet. But you know, we'll see if it starts to kick ass as we go through.
Yeah, we'll keep folks apprised of the situation here.
Again, our strong versus normal everyday smokers strong is usually a different scale. Because we always smoke things that hurt a little. You know, if it hurts a little, you're doing it right.
What if it hurts a lot? We'll get later into that, into science.
Yeah.
Oh, so stick around for the painful topic.
So, yes, here on episode 99, let's talk about some baseball.
And if you're at a ball game and you find yourself in a lull because your team's losing, there's someone you can call to keep you energized.
StrikeForceEnergy.com. That'll get you through that seven inning stretch. And it's also, you know, comes in little tiny little pouches, so you can take it in any ballpark, pour it in your beer, whatever, make good beer bad, or bad beer good, and, you know, just put it in any kind of liquid, in, or just drink it straight if you're a man. Just squirt it right in your mouth, kick the can. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. First up at bat. Yes, we're still talking about baseball, and we'll probably make references that we don't understand because, you know, we don't follow a lot of sports.
I'm gonna need a pinch hitter.
That's the thing, is like I don't like generally watch a lot, like I don't seek out sports, but if sports are on, because normally you go to a cigar shop, there's sports on. It's like it's just part of the thing of going to a cigar shop is watching sports. So I watch them with them on, and I don't like follow like the day to day of like actual sporting events. I pretty much tune in at the end. Like I don't want to watch the whole thing. Let me tune in for the playoffs and the World Series or the Super Bowl.
If it's a local
skip
team,
right to the important shit.
You know, I find if it's not a local team, I am not invested at all. I mean, I'm not really invested when it's a home team. It's just like, all right, cool. Atlanta's doing something good. Falcons, you did something bad. You're being typical. They need a new coach. Speaking of new coaches.
Yeah, so, you know, but we are fans of movies, and baseball movies seem to be, like, you know, always, you know, and not just, like, I mean, there's documentaries, like, or not documentaries, but stuff based on real events, like, you know, 42.
Wait, baseball's a real sport? Son of a bitch.
But, you know, there's some, like, you know, that cover historical, you know,
I mean, dude, it is the great American pastime. Yeah.
But then the fictional baseball movie where it always seems like it's always like a great topic. It's that, you know, cheer for the underdog, that yay, go, you know, get you motivated. You know, it's one of those things that really like fires you up because it's watching, you know, the team that sucks become the heroes. This is always one of those like, you know, motivational
that or, you
things.
You know, I mean, you know, very much from the motivational standpoint. I mean, that or, you know, it's focused on one person that's been dealt, you know, a bad hand at life. And, you know, they've, you know, struggling to try to make it into, you know, the major league and stuff. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, for me, I like the films where, like you said, you know, you want the underdog to win or, you know, it's a great just coming of age, you know.
Yeah. And pretty much it's one of those things that it's kind of a universal topic where, you know, if you're watching a war movie or and something else, there's like, you know, not a lot of shared life experiences but with baseball, everybody knows baseball. It's not something that you have to like explain to people. It's because I mean, pretty much anyone, since you're a little kid and pick up a stick and a rock, you know, you play like, you know, baseball in your backyard or, And some people actually like go play Little League and whatnot. But it's one of those games that
I still find myself going out to a field occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those,
the sports that like, pretty much anybody can pick up. Not everybody's going to be great at it, but it's it's as
sometimes you might fracture your ankle throwing a baseball. Because I know somebody that fractured their ankle trying to throw a baseball.
It's like Kevin Costner says in Bull Durham, and we'll talk about that movie later on, but he's like, it's a simple game. You throw a ball, you catch a ball, you hit a ball. That's it. I mean, pretty much anybody can pick it up.
As long as you're hitting home runs. I mean, otherwise, you're going to need to run some bases at some point, because I think just hitting a ball and standing there like, I hit the ball, isn't going to do anything but get you out. And then you're going to have to go back and sit down.
Babe Ruth was like a fat guy who smoked cigars. You didn't have to run fast if you knock a home run every time. You can walk around those
bases.
You
didn't specify, you know, hit a home run every time, okay?
Like I said, it's a sport that even fat guys can pick up if you're good enough. And that's one thing, too. I think another thing that like makes baseball such an interesting topic to follow in movies and whatnot is like you go back in the day, like, you know, Babe Ruth era and like earlier, those guys were like smoking cigars, like at the bar, like, you know, getting drunk and like banging all kind of women and then showing up the next day and like playing ball. It was just one of those, like, all American sports. You could like, you know, just do like anything and like still like
it is a proven scientific fact that, you know, you perform better after having your balls played with. That's why they encourage, like, you know, NFL players and stuff, go home, get laid. Yeah, I mean, you know, it rejuvenates the spirit. It brings back a, you know, a sense of meaningfulness and pride and, you know, testosterone and whatnot. Totally sexist. But, I mean, that's kind of the other side of baseball is, you know, I mean, you get, you know, like what we're talking about, a lot of the motivation and stuff. But, I mean, it wasn't always, you know, very motivational. Yeah, I mean, it used to be legit struggles, you know, to make teams and with segregation and everything else. So, I mean, you know, I like to think that, you know, regardless of race, creed, whatever, that, you know, if you're calling something the American pastime, I mean, it should include all Americans, right?
Yeah.
Little inclusiveness. I totally went PC on you. How do you like it?
Look at it, you know, at least nowadays it is like a very inclusive sport. I mean, you got guys like, you know, Japanese players. You got a lot of people from, like, you know, speaking of cigars, you know, the Dominican Republic ball players and so it's kind of one of those that's like, you know, a little bit of everybody can join in and play. It's one of those that, you know.
I mean, dude, come on.
There's baseball teams worldwide.
Throw a ball, hit a ball, look at a ball. just keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, first let's talk about.
It's really funny, probably, like, man, two non-sports people trying to talk about sports. Like, anybody that's a sports person is going to be like, fuck those two guys. I'm never listening again. And episode 99, we lost all our followers.
Start over at 100.
We're just going to call this episode 00.
Oh. So, yeah, you know, not every baseball movie has to be a dramatic movie. There are some great entries into the comedy field of baseball movies. So let's talk about probably one of the classics, Major League from 1989.
It's a sports comedy.
Written and directed by David S. Ward. Yeah, and it's one of those that's like, you know, even if you don't follow baseball, it was pretty funny. I mean, it made like, you know, made for $11 million, made $49.8 million, was, you know, very successful for its time. And it spawned like two sequels that were less successful, but the original is kind of one of the classics of sports comedies. And, you know, has a lot of, like, you know, like a baseball team having young talent. This movie had a very young Wesley Snipes and Charlie Sheen. Especially, like, so weird watching Wesley Snipes pre... You forget Wesley Snipes was, like, a comedy guy back in the day.
Yes.
Like, skinny little dude. Yeah, like, you know, you're used to seeing him as, like, Passenger 57, Blade, like, big, burly action star. But, no, back in the day, he was Willie Mays Hayes.
It's because he kept his eye on the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, that was one thing, too. It was like, yeah, watching it with the wife, she's like, that's Wesley Snipes? I'm like, yeah, that's a really skinny Wesley Snipes before he, like, bulked up and became, like, a ninja.
That's what happens when you play ball.
You get all, yeah, this is the, you know, like, if they made this movie now, there would definitely be steroid jokes, but this was, like, yeah, pre the era of roid ball.
Roid rage!
And then Charlie Sheen went on to do all the drugs.
Do you think the Hulk could play baseball?
Oh, that would be pretty sweet.
And there went the stadium.
Hulk smash!
I could just see that on the billboard as it's, like, crashing down.
Oh, yeah, that freaking knock a home run to the next state. Freaking Bruce Banner playing ball gets beaned and then turns into the Hulk and kills everybody. I mean, that would have been, don't hit this guy.
Do you think that's what they were going for in Thor? It's like, imagine Hulk. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he would, like, shatter the bat, like, and it's... Maybe he could bunt.
It's a giant Hulk doing something as, like, small as, like, a bunt. It's like, then
dink. Nobody would understand. It's throwing everybody off their game. Like, you know, all the outfielders are, you know, in the parking lot or something, and, you know.
Yes, but basically this movie covers a fictional version of the Indians, which apparently really sucked at the time in the 80s, and the owner of the team dies and leaves it to his trophy wife, former Las Vegas showgirl, Rachel Phelps, played by Margaret Whitten, who comes up with this master plan that, you know, she's gotten a offer to move the team to Miami, but they have a contract with the city that has an escape clause. If attendance drops below a certain amount, they're allowed to leave. So she fires pretty much everybody, hires a, like, minor league manager who, like, works at a freaking tire shop and just fills the roster with either young unproven guys or washed up old rejects and tries to, like, you know, make sure they end up in, like, last place.
So basically the premise of this is, you have a cold-hearted witch. Notice I said witch. who is doing everything they can in their powers to undermine this particular team because they want to go to Miami. What is so great about... I want to go to Miami. Why? Traffic sucks. There's, like, one beach that's really crowded. Like, I just don't understand the appeal of South Florida. Maybe because I live too close to Florida. But
it's really hot, but they do have good Cuban food out here. Yeah, because it's so close to Cuba down there. Probably pick up some good cigars here and there. I mean, that's where Real Men Smoke Cigars is located. Is Miami? So
I don't know. I just, you know, I mean, I haven't spent. I've spent maybe a month or so in Miami, and I'm like, I don't really see the appeal.
Yeah, I've not really gone past Orlando, so I think the farthest south I've been is, like, West Palm. So, yeah, I've never been to America's Tip, yeah.
Just the tip.
You know, the washed-up team, you know, some of the highlights that an old pitcher played by Tom Berenger, Jake Taylor, and a young rookie criminal pitcher who has a 100-mile-per-hour fastball but can't hit shit, played by Charlie Sheen as Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn.
I can throw the ball really fast. Where that ball's going to go, you just don't know. I mean, sometimes you look for that trade in a... you know, in a pitcher. But, I mean, sometimes you got to make sure they can at least hit the catcher's glove.
Most of the time he's, like, you know, hitting people or he may have some anger issues. Like I said, they do recruit him from the California Penal League.
I think the character that probably most stood out to me was the dude that, you know, had his little voodoo doll.
Like. Oh, yeah. Pedro Serrano.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see that in too many films. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, 80s, maybe early 90s, you know, with Predator and such. I mean, voodoo used to be a real thing that was talked about a lot. You don't hear much about voodoo anymore.
And, of course, you know, he stands out to us because he smokes a cigar through, like, the whole movie. And his little, like, voodoo god that's supposed to, like, you know, ensure his bats are hitting balls is Jobu, which looks like a freaking old school treasure troll in a baseball uniform smoking a cigar. And yeah, like, freaking Jobu is a lot. Because, like, Serrano can knock the freaking cover off a ball if you throw him a straight one, but he cannot hit curveballs for shit. And he's just hilarious. He's like, bat's scared of curveball. Jobu needs to make bats not scared. And at one point, he, like, fills a freaking, like, whatever offering bowl full of gunpowder and, like, sets it off with a cigar in the middle of, like, the, he's like, what? I had to wake up bats.
I need more of that. Yeah. I guess I need to, you know, head down to Bayou Country and seek out some old school witch doctors.
Some hoodoo, some voodoo.
A hoodoo there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, friggin' Serrano is probably one of my favorite characters. It's so weird in, like, the sequel, he, like, becomes a Buddhist, and then he's, like, loses his, like, you know, power because he's, like, all, like, peaceful and shit. And then he finally has to bring Jobu back to, you know, find a balance. But, yeah, I like, too, when they're going through, like, the spring training and they're still cutting people on the team, he's, like, doing all these voodoo practice. So he's, like, you know, pulls out, like, his big-ass snake and is, like, you know, drawing symbols on his locker before he opens it to see if he's been cut, because they'll hang, like, a ribbon in your locker to say, you're out. And it, like, it works. So, like, freaking everyone else starts trying. Like, Wesley Snipes is, like, can't deal with the big snake, so he has this, like, tiny little green garden snake and is, like, trying to do the voodoo stuff with the little snake. And then later on, he's like, you know, Serrano's, still can't get his bats to work, and he's like, I need a live chicken. I got to sacrifice a live chicken to lift the curse. And Taylor, who's kind of like the veteran, he's like, we can't have a sacrificed live chicken. You know, we don't want people puking before a game. He's like, go get him a bucket of KFC. Tell him it's the best we can do.
All those secret herbs and spices makes voodoo really nices.
And what are the other pitcher who's like, you know, like, straight up a cheater. Like, he's like, oh yeah, I got all these things to rub on my balls, yeah, my to make my curveballs better and stuff. And he's like, yeah, like, which nowadays would get, if he got caught, would, like, get him banned. But he was like, oh, it's like, nah, it's like, I'm old, I can't throw for shit anymore, I gotta use any method I can. But he's like hardcore Christian dude, so he hates Serrano and decides to, like, you know, and he's like, don't touch Jobu's whiskey or you'll be very bad. So he ends up stealing some of his rum and then gets, like, struck by lightning when he walks out on the field.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I understand the sake of fairness. But if you're a professional sports player making millions of dollars, you should be doing everything you can to give yourself that added edge. See, to me, like, that would make sports entertaining. Yes, injuries are going to go up and everything, but hey, that's what you signed up for.
It's like they say, if you ain't cheating, you're not trying.
I mean, you know, exactly, you know, to a point. It's like, you know, hey, you know, if you want to get ripped up on roids and roid rage and whatnot, and, you know, eventually you succumbed. I mean, that's a choice that you made to be the best that you could be.
You know, maybe rules shouldn't be broken, but you can definitely bend the fuck out of them occasionally.
You know, so, hey, I need to make the ball a little tackier, or I need to, you know. I mean, I just feel like there needs to be a no-holds-barred, I don't know. I mean, we had the XFL, right? I mean, you know, it was supposed to be the, you know, extreme, you know, football league where the rules relaxed. Of course, that didn't last very long, but I'm okay with people getting body slammed and, you know, whatnot. I mean, that to me is quality entertainment. Oh. I didn't sign up to get battered and bruised, but I'm okay if you're willing to do so. I mean, it's capitalism.
Yeah, and of course the wild pitcher Vaughn, they finally just realize he can't see. It's like it's not that he has no control; he just can't see shit. So they get him some glasses, and he starts like kicking everybody's ass. And then he also bangs one of his. Of course, you know, there's always rumor.
Gives her the old grand slam, I see.
Yeah. But, what's his name? Corbin Burnson plays Roger Dorn, who's, like, kind of a prima donna, like, doesn't want to, like, really get injured or play hard because he's, like, I'm just in it for the money. But he's, like, banging women out on the tour and whatnot, and his wife sees him on the news, so she decides to get vengeance and goes sleeps with the rookie pitcher and tells him like, so yeah, like the final game right before the playoffs, like, you know, he's like looking for, and you get that moment too, where they don't want him to start. They're going to make him like a reliever for the day because he's had problems against the Yankees. So they finally bring him up to close and he comes walking over like, oh, you're going to have the big fight. He's just like, I got one thing to say to you. Strike this motherfucker out. And he's like, oh, okay. So he's like, kind of like, you could see that he was nervous. Like, he's like, I, as much as I want to kick his ass right now, I don't want him to blow this game. Let me like relieve some of the stress so he can concentrate on the game. And goes up and is like, no problem. Kick this guy's ass. I'm going to beat your ass after the game. But right now, we need to win this thing. And they have that big celebratory moment where they're like all cheering and hugging. He punches him in the face and he picks him back up and they go back to cheering and hugging.
I mean, but if two people are cheaters, why not just say you're polyamorous and call it even?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like eye for an eye there. You know, it's like,
I mean, you know, hey, you know.
He didn't know that was his wife. I mean, it was... yeah, Major League is probably one that was like going back and rewatching is like, I was like, I forgot how good that movie was. And I like the, cause
you just like Wild Thing.
Well, I do like, they keep going and like getting reactions from like the people of Cleveland. And it's like, you know, the first they're all like, oh, they suck. And then like later on they start winning like, oh, they're not so bad. And by the end of them, everybody loves them. And then there's the two like Japanese, like, whatever grounds crew. And they're like, they're shitty. And even when they start winning, like, they're still shitty. And by the end, they're like, okay, they're not shitty.
They're a little less shitty.
Yeah. And the whole thing of, like when they find out the owner is trying to, like, screw him over, they get that cardboard cut out of her naked. And, like, you know, like, for every game we win, we peel off a little bit of clothing. I mean, sometimes you got to have, like, you know, motivation.
Sex.
It's a great motivation. But let's go from professionals back to like the pure just love of the game. And let's talk about a little movie called The Sandlot.
Oh, yes. Now, I don't know. The Sandlot has a special place. You know, it's like if Goonies was centered around baseball. I mean, I think that's one reason why I love this movie so much. I mean, you know, of course, in Goonies, there were actual foes. And here, I mean, it was like an M. Night Shyamalan film.
A twist.
It was a twist. I mean, you know, the first time you watch it, you don't realize there's a twist. Now, I will say that it didn't pan out quite the way I wanted it to, because, like, I imagine, like, Beast, and you hear, like, the ferocious roars and everything else, and, you know, I anticipated, like, a little, you know, chihuahua or a Jack Russell or something, you know, just like...
He was big, but he wasn't as big as the kids imagined him to be. Yes,
I mean, you gotta put it in a kid perspective, dude.
Yeah, dogs look big as shit to them. Yeah, Sandlot is a 1993 American coming-of-age sports comedy, co-written, directed, and narrated by David McKinney Evans, which tells the story of him as the new kid in town that wanted so desperately to have friends and learn about baseball, but sucked. And because it's one of those things, like, everyone grows up learning how to, like, throw a ball and whatnot, but his dad had, like, died when he was very young, and he just kind of got a new stepfather who hadn't, like, warmed up to him enough to teach him essential man skills. So he, like, didn't know how to catch, didn't know how to throw, and he's, like, the new kid in town. And was like, I got no friends, but there's this group of rejects that play baseball. There's, like, one guy who's, like, super talented, but he's the cool sports guy who has, like, the friends with all the kids that aren't as good as he is, and they play baseball, like, every day. And just for the love of the sport, they're like, they don't keep score, they just play. Like, as people move away or whatever, they just keep the game going. Like, it's just one, like, non-ending game of baseball every day.
Which, I guess, you know, this, you know, in my childhood, I was kind of that way. You know, I had, you know, my childhood best friend. And I mean, literally, you know, 6 out of 7 days a week, we were, you know, I mean, it was to the point to, like, in his backyard, like, we had, you know, put up fences and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, we played baseball. Kept us out of trouble. It was a great way to get, you know, 5 or 6 people together. And, you know, like, yeah, you said, it was all for fun. You know, some people were good and, you know, played in leagues. Other people, you know, hey, I've never thrown a baseball. Okay, well, these are the things that you do. Practice, you know, I mean.
Yeah, and since it was also set in, like, 62, it was that time where people could just, like, kids roam the streets, like, mostly unsupervised. You know, you come home when it got dark. It was, like, a more innocent time, I guess, before the internet. And there was probably still crime, but we just didn't know about it then. But, yeah, the sand lot they play on is right next to a closed-down junkyard or whatever, and there's a junkyard dog that lives over there. And it's, like the lead-up to, like, seeing the dog is great, because all the kids are like, no, we've lost, like, 150 baseballs. Like, once it goes over that fence, it belongs to the beast. Like, it will never be seen again. And, like, the kid who's, like, you know, starts joins him is playing outfield. And he's up there by that fence, and he's hearing this, like, sounds that sound like some monster. And even at one point sees, like, the shadow of it, and it looks like a T-Rex from, like, Jurassic Park. And at one point you even, like, see his head, and it's, like, huge. It's, like, just a giant monster of a dog until they actually see the dog. But it's fun. And he's like, well, what's the beast? And they tell him this whole legendary story about, you know, the guy who owns the junkyard's a mean old man, and he got tired of people stealing from his junkyard, so he got this dog. And it shows, like, a little puppy, and he puts him in this, like, trailer that is his doghouse and feeds him entire sides of beef, and he just, like, shreds it like a raptor and, like, spits out bones. And this little puppy comes out, and it's, like, freaking legs the size of tree trunks, and this giant monster of a dog. And they're like, oh, yeah, it killed, like, 150 people, to the point where the cops got tired of, like, reports of missing persons from all these robbers, but they never could find anybody because he ate, like, bodies, bones, and everything. And there was no evidence. So they finally, like, made him, you know, pin the dog up under his house where it's, you know, lived to this day. Only one kid was brave enough to go get his baseball, and he ate him and was never heard from again. And you just think the superstitions that kids come up with.
Yeah. Very, very superstitious. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's, you know, one of those things that's, you know, innocent enough. I mean, you know, I can remember breaking a window or something with a baseball. And in this case, you know, it's, you know, the kid that never really, you know, gets up to hit, actually makes good contact with the ball and sends it into the beast's backyard. Unfortunately, said baseball was borrowed by his stepdad, who was signed by Babe Ruth. So that's a ball that's like,
would be a $1 million ball today, probably.
It's like, well, I mean, it's like, if you're going to die for a ball, that's the ball you're going to... Because, one, if the beast doesn't kill you, your stepdad's going to. So you're dead either way. I mean...
And that was the one thing, too. Like, when it starts off with him, you know, going into his dad's, like, man cave to ask him about teaching him how to throw, Dennis Leary just, like, never, like, looks like the loving father in a movie. He looked creepy as shit. Like... It'd been like the first time I saw this movie, I was like, oh, this is going to be a story of this kid getting like the shit abused out of him. But he never does. He just basically like ignores him and like doesn't really want to deal with him. But like just the look of Dennis Leary in that opening sequence, like looking at him like, yeah, sure, I'll teach you. I'm like, he's going to beat the shit out of this kid. I mean, I was like, I was waiting for this movie to take a dark turn.
Almost does. I mean, you know, because it's like, you know, he's like, all right, I'm going to throw it at you. Now, he doesn't just, you know, warm up. All right, we're going to do an underhand pop fly. No, he just flat out, you know, all right, it's incoming, and it cracked you in the face. All right, you got to keep your eye on the ball, move your glove in front of the ball. Like no precursor, just smack, you got a ball to the face.
But yeah, I expected this story to have a much darker turn, because Dennis Leary just looks creepy no matter what. I mean, I like Dennis Leary. He's funny as shit, but yeah. Him as a loving father just does not you know, track in a movie. But yeah, he's a big baseball fan and has this Babe Ruth signed baseball. And if one of the kids hits the ball over the fence, they're like, well, we're done playing for the day because we can only afford one ball and no one has any money. And he's like, well, you know, the kid's like, I'll you know, he wants so desperately to be friends. He's like, I know where I can get a ball because his dad's out of town for like a week. So he steals his like Babe Ruth ball. And the thing is, this kid who's so desperately wants to learn how to play baseball and join the other kids knows jack shit about the baseball, because they're all like, you don't know who the Gambino is, the Sultan of Smut? And he's like, has no clue about who Babe Ruth is, and which is like the running joke of the movie. And he's like trying to, like, you know, act like he does know who, oh yeah, yeah, sure, the Sultan of Smut, I know exactly who that dude is. So when they hit the ball, and they're like, you brought the ball, you get the first hit. He hits his first home run, and he's like, oh, fuck. And he just, like, runs, like, straight to them. And they're like, dude, he's, like, his first home run, it just melted his brain. He, like, forgot to run around the bases. And he's like, no, my stepdad's going to kill me. That's some ball that some girl gave him. Like, some girl's like, yeah, she even signed her name on something Roof, like Baby Ruth. They're like, that was a Babe Ruth ball. Yeah, yeah. It's like, dude, the Gambino. What? And it's like, then it like made it even worse. Like, oh, you were dead for, no, now you're really dead, because that ball is worth more than your life.
But I mean, you know, I love the innovativeness of the ways on how do we try to retrieve the ball. I mean, yeah. You know, great, you know, freaking engineers for kids, you know? I mean, that was some MacGyver-ass shit
where, like you said, it has the Goonies feel to it, just like the complicated plans of how we're going to get this ball back, because at first they're trying to do the typical kid thing, like, oh, we'll just sign a ball and, like, try to pass it off. And then he finds out that the reason why he loved that ball so much, it wasn't the fact that it was a Babe Ruth ball, it was something that his dad had given to him, so it had that, you know, deep meanings. And even his mom, he's like, even his mom knew who Babe Ruth was and how special that ball was. So he's like, fuck, I gotta get this ball back. So, like, yeah, they've got the MacGyver-esque ways of getting it back. Like, the first time they just tried with, like, and the dog too is like fucking with them, because they've like, they're like looking in the backyard and the dog like not like throws the ball out there. It's like baiting them. It's like, this is like, you know, epic battle between man and beast, because like they're like, any ball we've hit over there, it becomes the property of the beast and we've never seen it again except for this one ball. It's just out there waiting for them to try to get it back. And first they tried like a bucket, or like they tried to like get it with a broom, and the dog just eats the broom. And then they're like, all right, we'll like put a pot on a metal stick and stick out there, and he just crushes it and chews up and throws it back over the fence. So then they start to lower the one guy
with like 30 extensions on it, like,
and the pretty epic explosion too, when the because apparently, you know, 60s vacuum cleaners, if you clog the pipe, they would explode.
I think that was just a bit of Hollywood magic.
But it did have the nice Hollywood action sequence of, because the whole story is told in by a kid's perspective, you know, because it's the author, you know, kind of narrating the whole thing. So to him, yeah, it was like a giant explosion, and like you see them all running and diving from the explosion like a Hollywood action film.
And yet there's this big explosion, but no parents come to check on the kids. It's like, yeah, shit, treehouse blew up. They're still good.
Whatever.
It's the 60s. It's groovy.
Yeah. Oh, and then like the one kid, like, who's like the freaking engineering genius, decides to like, we're going to go all out and builds like this giant like erector set, like remote control car ladder thing to they're going to drive it in there, scoop it up, and then like catapult it back over the fence. But like Jaws, they're like, We've got it hooked. It's launching. It's going over the fence. Oh, no. The massive dog just comes up and swallows it. And then chews up their erector set invention. Which, yeah, it was... Yeah, like, so that whole sequence of events was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, just the, you know, the different perspectives, the fact that it's told from the kid's perspective, the, you know, I mean, just the larger-than-life, you know, antagonist of the Beast. I mean, it makes for an all-around feel-good movie. And, you know, I mean, it also, too, you know, just the, you know, kind of, you know, like all the other kids, you know, are kind of picking on the new kid because he doesn't know how to do these things. But the one kid that's legitimately good is like, no, you know, this is a sport that anybody can do.
And he's like, in fact, you know, hold your glove up. I'll do the rest. Just like, he's like, I don't know how to catch. He's like, just stand in center field, hold your glove up. I'll take care. And hits it right into his glove and gets him his first catch. And then after that, he actually gets more confident and starts learning how to throw and catch all that. And then speaking of coming of age, let's before we get to the reveal of the Beast, let's talk about Wendy Peppercorn for a minute. because this kid, what was it, Specs or whatever, the nerdiest of the rejects who has the big, thick glasses. You know, they go to the pool when it's too hot to play baseball, and there's a super hot lifeguard named Wendy Peppercorn, and he comes up with the most genius of kid scams. He's like, I can't take her teasing me anymore. Like, I've got to. He goes to, like, can't swim, goes to the diving board, and jumps in intentionally, almost drowning, just so she'll rescue him. And then they're all, like, freaked out, worried, and she's, like, doing CPR, and I'm like, come on, man, you gotta live. And he finally opens his eyes and winks at him, and then just freaking lands like a kid, like slips through the tongue and everything and gets them banned from the pool. But I mean, it was like one of the most legendary moves. And he says, like, either like, even though we were banned from the pool, every time we walked by, she kind of smiled at him. And later on, and even when they're like kind of given the prologue of like, this is what happened to everybody after, like, oh, he grew up and married Wendy Peppercorn. I mean, so he risked it.
You know, I would literally give my life for you. I literally almost gave my life for you.
And then you also have that great moment of the actual, like, kids who play Little League, who are probably from the richer families, because they're all riding bikes and stuff, come to the Sandlot to make fun of them. And they're like, we will kick your ass any day of the week. And they're like, all right, come to our field, let's play. And then they kick the shit out of them. And, like, it's one of those things you, like, expect, like, a Bad News Bears type thing, where, like, you know, they go to the up against the good kids and get, like, beat down. But no, they, like, destroy them. Like, hit a grand slam at one point and just, like, yeah, we may be the rejects that play on the Sandlot, but we'll kick your ass. Which I thought was also kind of cool.
Never underestimate your opponent.
But then you have that great dream sequence where Benny, the one kid who's good, dreams of Babe Ruth. And comes in smoking a cigar and tells him, like, dude, you got to be a man. You got to face the Beast. If you're going to be a professional ball player and, you know, face down professional pitchers, and you got to man up, get the ball back. Face your fears. And he's like, I got to do it. I got to challenge the Beast. So he gets on his special sneakers that are guaranteed to make a kid run faster, jump higher, and leaps the fence to face the Beast. And it comes out in this giant monstrosity that they had been seeing and imagining. Just regular size, like Mastiff. I mean, he was a big dog, but he wasn't like the freaking giant monster.
Wasn't
that
like
they
Dire Wolf, you know?
Yes, I mean, they had been imagining. But and he actually manages to, yeah. And the dog kind of, like, you know, comes out with the ball in his mouth and throws it, like, to kind of like the midground, like, let's do this. And it's like this epic, like, Western drawdown moment of him running and snatching the ball before the Beast can get him. But then the Beast gets off his chain and chases him through the town, and hilarity ensues. And runs him all the way back to the Sandlot, where he jumps the fence and the fence falls on the dog. And then they're like, oh shit, we got this thing that's been wanting to kill them, or they've been imagining wanting to kill them. We got to save him because he's, like, hurt. And then he's like, oh, I like you guys. You're my friends now. You saved me. Hey, look, here's this, like, 150 balls I've been hiding. They're like, we can play forever now. And the whole thing, they're like, well, why don't we just go knock on the dude's door and ask for our ball back? They're like, oh no, he's like me. He'll feed us to the dog. So they find, like, you know, since he broke his chain, like, and they, you know, made friends with him, they're like, we should let his owner know that he escaped. And it's James Earl Jones. And he's like, why don't y'all just knock on my door? I would have let you head the ball back. And they're like, fuck. We went all through all this for, like, no reason. And they tell him about, like, the, you know, the Babe Ruth ball. And He's like, oh yeah, you are dead, kid. But he's like, come on in. Let me show you something. He's like, tell you what, I'll trade you that nasty ball for this one. And he has one that's signed by the entire Yankees team. He's like, you know, he's like, you're still gonna get in trouble, but this might get you, not get you killed. And it turns out that he was a, you know, professional baseball player himself, and had actually played with Babe Ruth and all these guys back in the day, but he got hit in the head with a fastball and lost his vision. He's like, tell you what, he's like, I'll give you this ball. Y'all come here and talk with me about baseball once a week, you know, because I'm an old man, I'm lonely, and I want to talk baseball with people who still love the game. And, you know, giving him that ball to his dad, you know, actually warmed him up, and he actually, you know, started playing ball with him and stuff. But then, yeah, then you get the whole, like...
Where are they now?
Yeah, which I like that, like I said...
You don't get that in too many movies anymore. And, you know, it's always one of those things, like, you know, unfortunately, like, so many films, you know, you're just, characters are designed to be disposed of, you know? So, I mean, it just, you know, I would like to go back toward that, you know, a little bit. I mean, because it's kind of cool, you know, to be like, oh, you know, 20 years from now, this is what happens, and... Hey, he got the girl.
And the one kid's like the two brothers like grew up to be architects and a contractor and invented the mini mall or the strip mall and were like super rich. And he's like the one guy got really into the 60s and we never heard from him again. He became a hippie. but then the one kid who was actually good, you know, turns out he went on to actually play in the majors, and the kid that knew nothing about baseball grew up to become a sportscaster and was like, you know, the announcer for the team that his buddy. So like they stuck together, you know, all those years later. But yeah. And of course it brings us the great quote that I still hear like constantly. You're killing me, Smalls.
Yes.
You're killing me. I mean, that is one of those catchphrases that has gone on forever. And even, I saw like, the guy who played, Hamilton, he found a guy on the street that was wearing a You're Killing Me Smalls t-shirt, and him and another guy from the movie just happened to be there, and they're like, we want to get a selfie with you, and like took a picture with the guy, and the guy had no clue who they were, and he tweeted out and goes like, it's great meeting this dude, and he has no idea why we think his shirt is so funny. And it's Patrick Renna, who played Hamilton Ham Porter. but yeah, this one was like, yeah, you know, say it's been a long time since I saw that, and I forgot how like good of a movie that it was. So you watched a movie I didn't watch. You know, going back to some more family friendly baseball films.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I went back and, you know, revisited Angels in the Outfield. I mean, I'm sure you've probably seen the movie more than a dozen times as I have. I mean, it's, you know. I don't know. I mean, it was one of those iconic, you know, just kind of feel-good movies. I mean, yes, the central premise is, you know...
It's a Disney film, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Disney owns everything, but...
Everything's a Disney movie at this point, so that really doesn't narrow it down.
But yeah, I mean, you know, just the fact of not only the baseball aspect, but just the, you know, development of, you know, the characters and their progression, you know. I mean, you got your two main characters, you know, Roger and JP, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Milton Davis Jr. And, you know, basically, you know, they're in foster care. They're, you know, don't have a lot of money or anything else, no real good guidance. So, you know, kind of their pastime is, you know, sneaking into baseball games of a dreadful California Angels.
Yeah, and he doesn't have anything. It's like he asks like his dad or something like when they'll get to be a family. He's like, yeah, when the Angels win the pennant. Yeah,
I mean, that was always kind of the thing, you know, the dad just being, you know, I mean, unfortunately, you know, he seemed sort of halfway caring enough if he would have just gotten his act together and, you know, stepped up, but, you know, unfortunately his dad would rather bend over and be like, look, it's easier for me to sign you off to the state than it is for me to, you know, work on myself and everything else. So, I mean,
yeah, so the kid prays for help and the Angels get some Angels. Which, I mean, it's a cute movie. And like, and like the effects of like, yeah, the angels helping the players in the air. It's just amusing. Some of the stuff. And like the team is like, the kid kind of becomes like, you know, the mascot of the team because he's like,
well, yeah. I mean, he's the only one that can really see him. And, yeah. You know, I mean, it, and, you know, it's, you know, you get the head angel that's like, look, you know, once, you know, nobody can know about this. You know, we like to be discreet, you know, and, you know, everybody thinks he's crazy. And, you know, Danny Glover, you know, as the coach, George Knox for the Angels, you know, I mean, he's just cold. He's pissed off. He's tired of losing. And, you know, I mean, it changes, you know, the way that he interacts, you know, because originally he's like, oh, yeah, this kid's crazy and blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, it introduces motivation, you know, from a spiritual aspect, yeah. Which...
And hope,
know,
too, because yeah. At that, you know, point, like, they really had no hope. He's like,
well,
we're
I mean,
suck.
You know,
we're
the, you know
suck.
When the Angels, like, you know, hey, this is a playoff game. We can't interfere, you know. And, you know, he stands up and does the, you know, iconic, you know, angel wing wave. And, you know, then the whole stadium get, you know, even though the team wasn't getting help directly, you know, it was enough motivation for them to, you know, look in their inner selves and be like,
just that, you know,
we
placebo effect,
yes.
Of like, we think we're being helped, so we play better. Kind of take some of the pressure off of them. And yeah, even though they were doing it on their own at that point.
But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, kind of crazy just the character development and everything. I mean, you know, originally, you know, George just kind of uses them as a, you know, I guess just a form of good luck charm or something. And, you know, later on, they form a legitimate bond. And, you know, he goes on to adopt them and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I just, I don't know. I mean,
it's a feel-good man. He ends up with, you know, wasn't the family he necessarily was trying to get, but he ends up getting the, you know, not the family he wanted, but the family he needed or deserved, you know, by the end of it. Instead of his, you know, dirtbag father.
Well, and, you know, too, I mean, the fact that, you know, they both got adopted, you know, because that was one of the things that was earlier on, you know, you see kids come in and, you know, one will get adopted, but then the other two, you know, won't or something. And, you know, that's got to play hell on the psyche and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those that I still feel like kind of stands the test of time. I mean, in a day and age where there's so much negativity and everything, it's good to just, you know, see something uplifting.
Oh, yeah. And there's so many, like, I mean, we can't talk about every baseball movie. There's so many, like, honorable mentions. Field of Dreams is one of those that always kind of comes up when you talk about baseball movies. A League of Their Own was just on at Cigar Shop the other night, and that's one that kind of, you know, holds up as well as a good, you know, baseball movie. And, you know, and, you know, gave us the line, you know, there's no crying in baseball. Or that epic long piss that Tom Hanks takes. There's another line too where they go to the church for like pre-game prayer, and he's like, you know, Lord, I want to thank you for those two ladies last night. You know the ones. They kept calling your name. Tom Hanks had some great lines in that movie. But another one, you know, when I was kind of looking up stuff that made, like, you know, Rotten Tomatoes list of best baseball movies, and also...
because they're so credible, yeah. And in line with, you know, 99% of the shit that we actually talk about.
But also,
about,
like, yeah, Sports Illustrated, you know, 100 Greatest Sports Movies, it was, I think, the number one movie that... And that's a movie that turns 30 this year, Bull Durham, starring Kevin Costner, Tim Robbins, and Susan Sarandon. Made in 1988. Written and directed by Ron Shelton. It's another, like, you know, really super successful movie for its time. It, like, made for 11 million, or was it made for 7 million, made 58 million. So, I mean, that's pretty big money in 80s. 80, that's a huge return on investment. But yeah, it follows Kevin Costner as kind of like Tom Berenger in Major League, the veteran pitcher, or not pitcher, catcher, who was brought in by a you know, single A minor league team, the Durham Bulls, because they've got a kind of like Wild Thing Vaughn, a pitcher who, as they say, has a $1 million arm and a nickel head because he's, you know, can throw super fastballs, but he's like has no control because he gets in his own head and just overthinks everything. So he's like, you know, throws as many like walks as he does strikes. And they're like, this kid has potential to become a Major League Baseball player, but we need someone to mature him. So they bring in this vet that's kind of at the end of his career to be his role model and teach him the ways of baseball. But at the same time, you have Susan Sarandon, who is a baseball groupie, and she's like has studied just about every religion, and now she says she's following the Church of Baseball and kind of picks one rookie every year to make her boyfriend and, you know, teach him the ways of the world. And, you know, both of them kind of coming at it from, you know, different methodologies, but, you know, kind of, you know, make a, you know, professional ball player out of Tim Robbins, you know, character of Nuke.
See, I'm sure I've seen the film at some point. I just, you know, it hasn't been recent enough for me to talk about it. We did a lot of this research and shit. Originally, this was on the schedule for, like, you know, the beginning of the baseball season.
Yeah.
But
then when, we had Dragon Con, I got sick, and it got moved around a couple times and ended up at the end of the season. But yeah, it's, you know.
It's never over, man.
But yeah, it's kind of funny.
Can we do winter baseball, like, on ice and stuff?
That would be interesting.
Baseball meets hockey.
So that's what they need to do. Like, football, they never call a game because of, like, rain or snow. They just play in, like, the swampy conditions. But baseball, they're like, oh, it's raining. We can't play. We got to put cover up the... No, we need, like, freaking all-weather baseball where it doesn't matter if it's, like, muddy and slippery. They still play. That would make that shit interesting as hell. injury rates probably go up, but it would be fun to watch.
But, I mean, the injuries and stuff that would be sustained... I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, shit, we did shirts and skins, you know, football, and, you know, we didn't have a grass field. We played on freaking gravel, like, you know, tearing ourselves up.
Oh. But, yeah, it's funny, too, because, like, you know, she tries to seduce both of them. She's like, I haven't chose who my player this year. And freaking Kevin Connors is like, I'm too old to, like, try out for anything. And he's like, first person to actually turn her down, and it kind of makes him like more attractive because she's even though she's like, you know, has picked Tim Robbins, she's like slowly starts falling for Kevin Costner, and he has this great, you know, he's like, you believe in a bottom bunch of crap? Like, this is what I believe in. I'm a simple man. Like, goes this all, you know, this whole like list of things I believe in. The final thing he says, and I believe in deep kisses that last for 3 days. And like, literally, like by the end, when she finally like realizes, like, no, this guy actually is. I've been playing with kids, and this dude's on my level. I'm actually in love with him. And, you know, after Tim Robinson, they clean him up, and he gets drafted to the major leagues. You know, they have no more reason for him, so he ends up getting let go of the team. So he, now that he's gone and he's, you know, no longer dealing with baseball, he comes to her, and they, like, literally, it's kind of like the Deadpool sex montage. I mean, that stuff does last for 3 days, because I've been... it's like a great sex montage before, you know, the... Deadpool sex montage. And then, like, the things too, he, like, just fucking with Tim Robbins, trying to get it in, like, his head, like, where he stops thinking. He's like, you don't make decisions. You throw the pitches I tell you to pitch. And then, you know, everyone's like, he's like, I'm gonna throw the fastball. And he's like, all right. So he just tells he's like, hey, batter, here comes a fastball. And dude just knocks it out of the park. And then he goes up and he's like, man, that thing got out of here so fast that she's like, yeah, I'm going to have to charge the airfare on Delta or something. And he's like, you told him I was thunder. Oh, yeah, I totally did. But, man, did you see how hard he hit that thing? He's like, fuck, okay, I'll do what you tell me.
Speaking of the dipping, that reminded me of the Sandlot. Like, you know, guess I'm going to retract. Cause
oh, yes, I forgot about that scene. Because, you know, dipping is probably one of the most... known things in baseball is like, you forget, maybe not much these days, but back in the day, it's like baseball players are always spitting, they're always like dipping. So the kids are like, you know, gonna go, they're having a celebratory night and going to the county fair. And the one kid's like, I've been saving this for a special occasion. It's like the official dip of like, this is what the majors use. So they all like, you know, make a huge mistake of trying a Big Dip and then going on some kind of like fair ride that most of those are guaranteed to like make you puke anyway. And they just like hose the entire fair. Like everybody's like running off the ride just covered in puke. And they're like, yeah, we went back to like Big League Chew at that point and never tried it again.
Which is another thing that was so iconic for so many years. And I don't think you can still get Big League Chew anymore.
Oh, yeah, you can still get Big League. Because one of my friends like gets like a bunch of that stuff. I don't know what. But yeah, because back in the day, it was like we had like candy cigarettes and bubblegum like chewing tobacco because they're like,
we were being conditioned.
Yeah. So nowadays, it's hard to find that stuff. But Big League Chew has stood the test of time. It is still available in certain gas stations.
I figured it'd be something like, you know, Big League Bubble or something, you know. Because
I don't know if it's... I don't remember it still says Chew, but it's pretty much the still looks like the old dip packages and is that shredded bubble gum that looks like chewing tobacco.
I've personally never tried chewing tobacco. I don't think I want to, though.
No, it just looks disgusting. I mean, I'd rather have my cigar. Yeah, like I don't even like smoke cigarettes, but you know, yeah, Big League Chew. That was, you know, because there's nothing like getting a whole lot of bubble gum at one time. You stick that whole fistful in your mouth and you're chewing on something the size of a baseball.
It hurts.
Yes. Rot your teeth, but it won't give you gum cancer.
Is that proven?
Probably. I don't know. Pretty much everything will give you cancer at this point. So as we're kind of, wrapping up. Oh, and the other thing in Bull Durham that reminds me of Major League is there's one guy on the team who is who's Cuban guy or whatever, but he believes in voodoo. So he's like, you know, rubbing a chicken wing on his bat to like, you know, bless his bat. And then at one point they're like, he goes up to have a conversation on the mound with the one guy that everyone else starts coming up and they're like all talking like the one guy's like, man, I can't catch anything. My girlfriend cursed my glove. I got to sacrifice a live chicken. And then one of the other players is getting married. So like, well, what are we going to buy, so-and-so for a wedding gift? And then the one guy's like, I'm not breathing right. That's why my pitches suck. And they're just all having this. And then finally the manager comes up like, what the hell's going on? I'm like, well, you know. His eyeballs are clogged. We can't breathe right. We're trying to figure out a good wedding gift, and we need to sacrifice a live chicken for his bat. All right. Well, candlesticks make a good wedding gift. Try bringing that to your other eye, and I'll see what I can do about the chicken. He's like, all right, bring it in a second. They tell this whole line of bullshit, and he's like, all right, here's my advice. Now can we go back to playing? It's kind of reminded
that's
me.
That's a sign of a good coach.
Yeah, just... Yeah, because that's one thing, too. He's like, they talk about superstition and that, too. And he's like, you know, if a player thinks he's winning because he's having sex, because he's not having sex, because he's wearing the same socks, he's like, you let him believe that. You never mess with a winning streak. And they're like, it makes sense. Like, we know it's bullshit, but don't, you know, if believing that makes someone win, you let him keep believing it, you know, no matter how stupid it is. But, you know, as we kind of wrap this up, any highlights, any favorite moments from what we've discussed, or any... movies we haven't discussed that should be thrown in here as essential baseball films.
Well, I mean, I think Rookie of the Year is probably really far up that list. Unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of the newer, you know, in the last couple of year films. I mean, they just... I don't personally go out and seek sports films, but sometimes, you know, if I'm over at a friend's house and it's on, I watch it and I'm like, hey, you know, it's not bad or anything else. You know, I'm not anti-sports. It's just not something that I follow on my day-to-day routine. So I think that's one that deserves recognition. I don't know. I mean, you know, the whole time we're talking about the shenanigans and everything else, and, you know, I keep thinking about Angels in the Outfield and the coach's assistant that's basically put in charge of the boys to, you know, you just give them everything that they want, you know, and it's like, you know, and I mean, he just freaking sits on a plate of nachos. He gets, you know, freaking hot dogs, you know, dropped all over him and everything. And I'm like, you know, yeah, no respect whatsoever, you know.
I mean, speaking of no respect, yeah, Bad News Bears 2 is probably one of those classic baseball films that everyone should see. And that's one of those where, too, it's like, you know, most baseball films, it's like the underdogs win at the end. But, you know, Bad News Bears, they get their shot at the major, you know, the whatever, Little League, World Series, and then they lose. This is kind of like... You know, teaches you about reality. Sometimes you might be the underdog. Sometimes you're still going to lose, and you gotta learn from it. That's how you be a man. It's not about the winning. Sometimes it's about how you deal with losing that is the best lesson in life in this whole like participation trophy culture. Now, sometimes you got to learn how to deal with the losses as well as the wins. So any final thoughts on this here Dogma cigar, which, I mean, it's got a lot of flavor to it. It kind of, the strength, once the, my taste buds caught up, it's not a powerhouse my level, but it is pretty strong.
I read so much hype that my expectations, I think, were set too high. This is a cigar that I'm going to have to try again so I can form a unbiased opinion, but... there's flavor. There's, the construction and everything was good. But it wasn't the hype that I kept reading that, it should have been. This isn't the cigar that says, man, I just got to rush out and go get another one.
I think some of its exclusivity, added to its legend. The fact that you couldn't really get your hands on it, without... seeking it out, maybe added to people like, oh my god, this is amazing, because took me so long to get one. So I don't know if the hype will stay with it now that it's more widely available, but it's not a bad smoke. I mean, it's like I said,
I'm not saying it's bad.
It's definitely worth, I don't know if it's a box purchase worthy, but it's definitely worth a second stick to really.
I mean, and I'm
give it a chance to stick.
A cigar has to be really, really terrible in order me to say, no, I don't need another one. I've, formed my opinion. Back when we reviewed the NAS cigar, the nasty ass shit. That's one that...
That was a one and done.
I don't need another one to form, an opinion about that. This one here, though, I mean, there's... For me, I look for more spice. And, I like spice. I like black pepper. The earthy, the wood tones. It was a bit soft for me, And, like you said, my full flavor is not the average person's, full flavor, full strength. This is a cigar that I'm going to have to go, and I may have did this cigar a disservice because I just came off of smoking a hell of a powerhouse no more than, in an hour and a half ago. So chances are my taste buds are being influenced by what was already on my palate that I know I really enjoy. And now I'm, adding to that. So that's why I'm saying,
after my power. I had a nice Taco Bell palate cleanser. So, to me, it's got a lot more. Like I said, it's not hugely powerful, but it does have a lot of good flavor, and it definitely one I will try again. But yeah, maybe you just need that palate cleanser before you try that one. On a virgin smoke.
No, that's what I'm going to do. Because I don't want to necessarily say anything negative about it. I'm just saying that. There was a lot of hype surrounding it, and just what I got here doesn't really support that. Now, I'm that way with so many cigars. I personally do not read Cigar Aficionado for that particular reason. Is there sticks that I've stumbled upon that I'm wowed by, and then they come out and do a review, and, it quadruples the price of, the cigar. So, this is one that I'm going to have to revisit. Nothing, necessarily bad. It just left me with a desire to have something more. And, I think not having that powerhouse beforehand, I'm going to be able to experience all that the cigar has to offer and offer a truly unbiased opinion.
Unbalanced opinion, yes. That's how most of our opinions are, unbalanced. And with that, we'll be right back.
Thank you. now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
Hi, and welcome back to the podcast. We are here with Amber England of Anachrocon. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. How's your con so far?
It's awesome. Lots of little kids. When you're dressed as Cinderella, it makes a great day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would say for the kids and the parents alike, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I had one toddler following me around for two blocks.
That's awesome.
So what is it that you do with Anachrocon, and what is Anachrocon for people who are not familiar?
Anachrocon is an alternate history convention that specializes in steampunk and science fiction, or at least it has for the past 10 years. I've wanted to take it since I took over with my co-chair, Jay. I've wanted to take it more into the time travel aspect that it's always had, thus allowing us to keep its steampunk roots while expanding into different areas of science fiction.
Yeah, open it up to future and...
Exactly. I want to show the image that the only limit really is your imagination.
And that's one of the things that I've always liked about alternate history, is it's so inclusive and you can do anything with it, you know, and just the possibilities are endless.
Exactly. If you can think it and you can create it and you can make it or have someone make it, it's a place to show it off and a place to have fun and learn how to do the things if you don't know how. So that is the one thing I love about it, is if you don't know what you're doing, we will teach you.
And for people like me who like to cosplay but be comfortable, I can wear my tennis shoes with my steampunk Victorian outfit. I'm like, I'm just a time traveler.
Yeah.
These are my future shoes.
Exactly. It's like when we have the people that walk around in the regular day clothes, it's like, well, you're from the future, you're from the present, or you're from wherever you want to be. And it's a lot of fun. And we've got a new musical guest this year, Tuatha Dia. We've got a couple of our favorite guests back, Lee Martindale and Stephanie Osborne. They'll be back. We are in a new hotel. We're in the Hilton Atlanta Airport. We'll be there for the next 3 years.
Awesome.
It gives us a place to grow, and I am so excited to say that we are going to finally, after 10 years, have an art show.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things is a lot of the art and stuff. I mean, it seems like every year I go and, you know, the last few, art didn't quite have the presence that it did, you know, a few years back. I mean, I remember one in Anachrocon walking away with several $100 of, you know, artwork, and that's what I completely decorated my basement in. So, awesome to see it coming back.
You always find something with Cthulhu on it at a...
Yeah, that is, oh goodness, what is their name? I love them to death. I can't think of it at the moment, but they're the one that makes the tiki mugs.
Yes. Oh,
they're always there.
Horror and Clay.
Yes, Horror and Clay. I love them. They're awesome. No, we've never officially had an art show. We've had a lot of vendors over the years that were artists, and their products were handmade. But we're this year finally able to give a distinction between your standard vendors and your handcrafted and your artwork. So that I'm really excited about, as well as our new logo for the 10th anniversary. And in light of all the changes that has been made over the past year, we decided it was time to change up the look. And so if you're at Dragon Con and you come by the table in the Hyatt, you can see the new logo. We're giving away free buttons with it. And I just hope that it shows everyone how beautiful Anachrocon can be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with, you know, like you said, being under new management, new location, other than the art show, is there any kind of new panels or stuff that you're planning for this year?
For this year, it's pretty much your standard, the original panel tracks. Within the next couple of years, if not this year, with a little magic, I want to bring in a classic animation track where I can bring in anything from Betty Boop to more anime itself. So being a classic animation and time traveling like that, we would have the capability of doing it now that we have the space. We also have a kids track again. We have the space for a kids track dedicated to the kids. So I'm very excited about that.
That is awesome.
Always good to get, you know, younger fans involved too. I mean, it's not just a convention for us old people. It's
yeah, we want to give them scavenger hunts and picture hunts and everything like that that they can do with their parents and have a true convention experience like the adults.
I always see like a lot of like families going to like these conventions together where it's like there's stuff for parents and children. Like it's something that's like it's kind of a hobby that we can all do together.
Exactly.
Where can they find tickets and locations, and also when is the Necker?
The tickets we sell on Eventbrite. You can access that either through our Facebook page or our website, which is anacrocon.com. Anacrocon this year is the 15th through the 17th of February for 2019. So you can find us anywhere on social media and find links to anywhere you need to go.
All right. And with this episode, we'll also post links to all that in the show notes. So, it's September now. You still got a few months. Get your tickets. Come check them out.
They are $50 a dragon. Always cheaper in person.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your con.
You too. Thank you so much.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite, because it's all so character-driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
And it's time for science. You ready to get weird, Brad?
Like weird science?
Oh, yeah. We got some weird science for you today. Anyone who's followed Strange Tales or, medical oddities, there's kind of a, anyone who's been in the emergency room profession has stories of finding things stuck in the human body that shouldn't be stuck in the human body.
I would say... emergency room, first responders, I would think, probably have it the worst. Like,
yeah, there's things you can't unsee. But
so
occasionally,
what's the strangest thing you've seen, Joe?
I don't even know. But occasionally, one of these oddities leads to advancements in science, and this is a story that. Falls into that category.
So this will be an advancement in medical science.
Yes. Doctors at the AAST Grand Hospital in Milan, Italy, currently encountered a 31-year-old male with a 23-inch dildo stuck in his rectum. Now, that's odd in and of itself. And apparently this man presented with, that it had been there for 24 hours and it could not be removed by hand and was now seeking assistance. But normal methods of removing items proved unsuccessful. They had to refer it to the endoscopic team headed by Dr. Lorenzo Dioscardi, who actually invented a new technology to avoid, because the other option would be highly painful and invasive surgery to remove this, and they didn't want to go that route. So,
I mean, just looking at the x-ray photos, I mean, dude, that shit's up in, near the rib cage.
Yeah, like, do yourself a favor and follow the link in the show notes and see this amazing x-ray footage. So, the normal method of, like, they said, one of them is to, endoscopically insert like an airbag and inflate and try to push the object out, but that didn't work. The other thing they have for removing polyps and such is to go in with like kind of like a lasso type device and hook it and pull it out, but that was also unsuccessful. So they came up with a method of inserting a stent tube into the orifice and then inserting a lasso of surgical wire through the tube to get it to where it needs to go and lassoing the object and successfully removing it out. But since this was such a revolutionary new technique, they thought other, endocrinologists should be aware of this, and actually published a paper in the BMJ case reports. So, you know, if you have any kind of accidents now, you know, Dr. Discardi has invented a new device to remove larger than average objects, if need be. This is some MacGyver shit. I mean, it's like some house would come up
but
with.
But I mean, then again, like, you know, looking at pictures of the device, like, it's so simple.
Yeah. You know?
It's like, why haven't we thought of that?
Sometimes the MacGyver-esque methods are the best, but yeah, they're like calling this a big advancement in in endoscopic surgery.
Hey, I mean, you know, whatever. You got to start somewhere. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like, how many things in life have been discovered because of an accident? It's like what they say was that.
Well, I mean, you don't really know how to come up with a solution before a problem presents itself.
Necessity is the mother of invention. This definitely falls into that that category. And from, you know, new methods of anal extraction to new methods of energy creation. They've discovered a way to make a different way of making fuel from sunlight.
So we're not talking about solar power.
No, this is kind of different. It actually produces fuel that you could run, you know, motors and whatnot over, because you know they're. It was a paper recently published in the in Natural Energy. They've basically there's a, you know, photosynthesis that creates, you know, energy within, you know, plants and whatnot and some animals. It's kind of developed as a survival strategy, so it only really produces like what energy is needed, and you know not, you know, as much as it could. Like say, you know, normal photosynthesis creates around 1-2% of what potentially it could convert and store. So they've, you know, lead author Katarzyna Sokol of the University of Cambridge basically developed this method. It was a enzyme found in algae called hydrogenases, which splits water into oxygen and hydrogen. And hydrogen can be used as a fuel. It's kind of like a evolutionary holdover where it's no longer useful for survival, but, you know, scientists have been able to reactivate this, you know, super photosynthesis system, and you know, use it in a mix, kind of a mix of biological and technological device that, you know, creates like, you know, a good amount of solar energy. And not only that, it's also cheaper than kind of previous studies in this, you know, because you know there's been some work on this what they're calling semi-artificial photosynthesis, but most of it has been like, you know, not very cost effective and would, you know, not be a good alternative fuel source. But this new way of doing it, using like the algae and stuff, is not only safer for the environment, but actually kind of cheap to do. So it could have like, you know, huge implications as it, you know, the technology further develops.
That's kind of cool though. I mean, you know, solar power is great and all, but, you know, the fact that we're finding new uses and different, you know, forms of energy is awesome.
That's one thing we definitely have, like, you know, a never-ending supply of is
I wouldn't
sun.
Say necessarily never-ending. I mean, you know, it is a star. Stars do burn out. I mean, hopefully it won't be in our lifetimes, but, you know, I don't think it's never ending. I think there's going to be an end, and it's going to be bad.
It's going to be longer than I care about.
And, you know, NASA's just, we've learned the sun's got 13 days. Fuck.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because that's one thing we've kind of talked about on some of these alternative stuff like wind power and whatnot, that a lot of it, sometimes it's far too expensive for the little amount of energy that we get. And yay, it's safer, but it's definitely not feasible to do on a large scale just because of the cost effectiveness of it. But this is something that, you know, could, you know, potentially decrease the expense of such alternative fuels. So, I mean, it definitely has potential. And also, you know, we've talked about, you know, space rovers and whatnot. Well, Japan has successfully landed the first ever rover on an asteroid.
So it's Armageddon.
Yep. We've landed a rover. I mean, we were talking about they landed like a satellite on a lander on a asteroid, but this is the first time something that's actually movable and can roam around the asteroid and study it. And I got to say, I've never heard of, because we always hear of NASA, but the Japanese version of NASA, which is the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, or JAXA, which I'm like, that's kind of a cool name. It's kind of metal. And the Hayabusa 2 spacecraft, which launched, you know, the thing about space exploration, it takes a really long time. So this thing was originally launched in 2014 and just now made landfall and deployed the Minerva 2, which consists of two rovers, but there's also two other rovers that will be launched later on in the mission to study what the asteroid's made of and, you know, map it out and study it. But these little rovers, which weigh about a pound each, they're like tiny.
Yeah, they're like 2 pounds,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, like tiny little, you know, hockey puck things. But they're, and they kind of, the way they move too is they kind of have like an internal mechanism that like spins and like actually they just said it kind of hops across. It doesn't like roll or walk. It kind of hops across the surface of the asteroid. But they say because gravity is so low on this thing, they have to be careful that they don't accidentally hop off the asteroid. But you know, but it's already streaming photos back from the, so now we've got our kind of first ground level photos of what it's actually like on an asteroid. It does kind of look like Armageddon. If anybody's seen that excellent film.
If not, you can hear us talk about.
Yeah, we did do an episode on that. At, you know, nearing 100 here, the episodes kind of all start to bleed together. And but yeah, the next, I think, deployment's going to be around October, and then like the fourth lander is to land sometime next year. But they're wanting to actually try to, you know, get samples from the surface and to study, which they attempted on a previous mission, but it kind of like, you know, did not it kind of crashed and did not go well. So this has like been the first successful landing on the name of the asteroid is Rugu, Ryugu. Yeah, it just kind of looks like weird concrete in space.
But it's awesome, though. I mean, it just puts in perspective how little we know about our surroundings.
Yeah, it's like, you know, never actually seen one of these up close. It's kind of interesting to see what the surface of another.
I mean, I always love, like, you know, actually, you see the Hollywood renditions versus, you know, the actual, you know, the surfaces and stuff, and it's like, 'tis interesting.
And to continue on our weird science theme, scientists have given octopus ecstasy for science. To study kind of how MDMA affects, like, you know, your brain, scientists have, in a study currently published in Current Biology, to see how it affects basically a anti-solitary, anti-social species of octopus, how the introduction of ecstasy affected them. And guess what? They become more social, engaged, and generally interesting in its surrounding. Huh. Probably you just ask any, like, rave kid. They probably could have told you this answer without dosing a bunch of octopus.
But they live in water, so they actually probably stay hydrated, unlike most of the rave kids that, you know, freaking burn up from the inside.
Yeah, so basically the test, they divided an aquarium into three equal-sized portions. One held, you know, a new object, and the second one had nothing in it, and the third one possessed another octopus that was kind of restrained in a plastic container where the other person could see it and touch it, but not, you know, and pick up on chemosensory clues, but really couldn't come into the same space. And they just to see how long it would spend in the various chambers after being dosed, and they found like the octopus, which is normally a solo species, spent a lot more time with the other octopuses and engaged in extensive ventral surface contact. You know, anybody who's you know, from everything you see in movies, anyone on ecstasy, they want to touch everybody and get all loving. That's why they call it ecstasy. So apparently that also works on octopuses. Yeah, I don't know how much this...
Secretly, the octopus is like, fuck, there's something in my water. How do I get to the other water?
But, you know, I don't know how much they spent on this study, but they probably spent a lot on, you know, with eight arms, an octopus can wave a bunch of glow sticks.
Just octo wave raves.
I just want to see, like, a freaking octopus, you know, freaking with, like... eight fucking glow sticks, like, jabbing out to some techno.
You know, it would just tie itself in a knot.
Probably. I remember those, like, I see them at Dragon Con every year in the raves, those little, like, those, whatever, that little ball thing that expands, and, you know, it's like a, you can pull it out, and you, it goes back together, and kids are, like, spinning it and doing all kind of crazy tricks with that. An octopus trying to do that and just getting, like, so fucking tangled would be hilarious. Well, that's all I got for this week. We'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
Whoa, it's like there was an echo. So up next, we've got Captain Marvel. We've got our first full-length trailer. And I gotta say, it's piqued my interest. I've read a lot of Marvel comics. Captain Marvel, not as familiar with. So this will be a great, you know...
Yeah, what little I know of Captain Marvel's has come kind of from some of the animated stuff. I don't think I've ever read any of her comics. But yeah, it looks interesting. And it's so weird seeing a younger Nick Fury with both eyes.
Yeah, that was... I was like, huh...
And Coulson's back, too. It was like, yay, Coulson.
I mean, it's like we're getting, you know, season one, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know?
Yeah. And, of course, the show, it takes place in the 90s. Starts off with her crashing to Earth through
a Blockbuster.
We're probably
going to see Blockbusters in there at some point.
Yeah, I know. She, like, lands in a Blockbuster. I'm like, yep, we're in the 90s. And people have pagers. Yep, we're in the 90s. Oh.
So, yeah, this will probably be a 90s kid nostalgia movie.
Probably.
We recognize these things. Oh, yeah. We don't know shit from the 80s, though.
It's like, you know, the Stranger Things, how that's all
there's probably going to be cassette tapes.
All been in the, you know, high on the 80s. It's like, now 90s nostalgia. That's when we know we're old. It's because when it was like... Yeah, movies from the 70s.
Yeah, when there's 2018 nostalgia, like...
Oh, God. So that's why how I know, because, like, yeah, it's like when music you listen to as a kid starts showing up on the oldies station. This is, like, the movie equivalent of that. Because, like, oh, yeah, this thing's retro. We're going back to the 70s. We're going back to the 80s. No, now we're going back to the 90s. Fuck, I'm old.
I mean, it's like Back to the Future.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting origin story, but where has she been through all of the Marvel universe? That's going to be a, you know, hopefully they come up with a good explanation of why we've not heard of Captain Marvel before now.
Well, I, you know, unfortunately, I think the reason you're hearing about Captain Marvel now is probably due to the success of Wonder Woman. I think this is going to
be... I just mean from, like, the story perspective.
Yeah,
of,
well, I mean, you know...
Yeah, you know, if she's been around since the 90s, why is she not showed up in any Avengers shit so far? So that's something they're going to have to... They've kind of gotten themselves in an interesting problem of introducing a new character that is not a new character. So
that, or it'll be, like, the first character that gets, you know... whacked by Thanos. Actually, Captain Marvel is supposed to be so powerful that, you know, if she does get whacked by Thanos, then, you know, it's going to cut to Stan Lee with an eraser, and it's going to be, haha, this never happened.
Yeah, so maybe she's been doing some super secret shit, or she's been out in space doing some stuff. That's why she's not shown up for any Avengers so far. It's one of those, like, shit's gone so bad, we got to call in the big gun. Like before then, we're like, nah, Tony can handle this shit. But they're like, oh no, we're fucked. We better call in the big gun.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really kind of curious, and I'm excited to learn more about a character that, you know, I know little to nothing about. So.
That's one thing when it first, like the first images we got of Captain Marvel, of her in the green suit, people were like, oh my God, that's not her suit from the comic books. But it looks, now that we've gotten a full trailer, it looks like that's something that she kind of showed up in. But, you know, on in the trailer, we get to see with her traditional red, blue, and gold suit from the comics. So, you know, in true Marvel fashion, they're trying to at least keep the look of the character close to its origins.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to switch gears. From Marvel, we jump over to DC. Because there's no rhyme or reason when I talk about news. So, you know, just try to follow along.
Just do it.
So we've got our first look of Todd Phillips' version of the Joker played by Joaquin Phoenix. Huge fan of Walk the Line. Yes. I don't know, man. It kind of, you know, looks more Captain Spaulding more so than Joker.
Yeah, he looks weird as shit. And again, I know nothing of this movie. I've kind of so toned out like the DC stuff that I'm less like, I know we're getting another Joker movie, but I don't know anything about it other than, yeah, we got Joaquin Phoenix playing Joker. But yeah, he looks like, you know, like, I don't know, like, hell, even him before they show him with the makeup, he just looks creepy as shit. I don't know what his origin story as far as this iteration is going to be, but yeah, he looks legit creepy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's going to, you know, basically, you know, to play a character who pushes author into insanity. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I've seen, you know, we talked previously, Zazie Beetz is, you know, going to be there. Mark Murren, maybe, from Glow, haven't seen. So I keep hearing good things about that, but I don't know. I've been such limited, like, on time, and my schedule has fluctuated so much that it's like, I don't want to begin TV series or a Netflix series or anything because I'm only going to be able to watch two episodes and then there's going to be a month that I can't watch anything.
Yeah, I'm just now catching up on Voltron and Iron Fist. I'm behind on my Netflixing as well.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, you know, what, you know, we get as far as, you know, trailers and stuff for this. As of right now, the Joker film is set to release October 4th of 2019.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering, I mean, it's kind of like I said with the Venom movie, like, how do you have the Joker so entwined in Batman, how do you have a Joker movie without Batman? Or, yeah, a Venom movie without Spider-Man? It's just weird.
Because
the origins of both those characters are so intertwined with the hero that, like, you know, having an origin story without them just seems weird.
You know what? I've seen some less than stellar DC movies. I'm not going to say this is terrible or, you know, have anything. This may be a hidden ray of sunshine that you're questioning, okay? This might be the film that brings some fresh life into things.
We can only hope.
You know, moving on from DC, let's talk a little bit about childhood and the first look at the new updated Chucky and the Child's Play reboot.
Which I didn't even know that was coming. as much as I love reboots, I mean, Chucky's one of those classics. It's like, you know, stop fucking with a good thing. I mean, the whatever Nightmare on Elm Street reboot sucked. The Friday the 13th reboot also mostly sucked. But yeah, now you're fucking with Chucky, and like the what little we've seen of the new version of him, he looks like way too cute. I mean, it looks like some kind of freaking anime doll. He's got huge eyes. I'm like, That doesn't look intimidating yet.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. But, you know, it is a reboot, so with modern times, instead of a defective buddy doll, this one is going to be a hacked buddy doll.
Oh, so now they're bringing in, like, electronics and stuff into
But, I mean, you know, hey. There's going to be a ray of sunlight. I'm about to give it to you.
Okay.
So this is being directed by Lars Klevberg, who directed an upcoming horror movie called Polaroid, but it was written by Tyler Burton Smith, Kung Fury 2.
Oh, shit. Now that I'm more hopeful now. That and, too, the image, because you really only got, like, half a face of the new Chucky, looks kind of like the son from the Seed of Chucky movie, like that doll. It kind of looks a little bit similar to that
got
model.
Freckles.
Yeah. So I say it kind of looks like the Seed of Chucky doll nearly.
So, yeah, no release date or anything yet on this, but we'll keep folks posted. I mean, Child's Play is, you know, one of those that I grew up watching way before I was old enough to probably have been watching those films. So, I mean, as a child, watching Chucky, that was like one of the nightmares. Like,
especially because it looked just like those like My Buddy Dolls.
If they did a horror version of Alf or something, then I would be screwed. Like,
oh wow, that would be wicked.
Moving right along here, Kingsman 3 has a release date.
Sweet.
Looks like they are aiming for November 8th of 2019.
Yeah, it's been a series that I've really loved. I mean, it's kind of been in a sea of reboots. It's kind of been a cool, like, new thing. And, and like I said, the sequel was, you know, a lot of times, like, the sequel just can't stand up to the original. And I thought the sequel was excellent. You know, I did like the introduction of the Statesman.
And Matthew Vaughn is returning to write and direct.
Sweet.
So, you know. But yeah, I mean, so far I've been really happy with, you know, the progression of,
I mean, they introduced the American version. Are we going to get, like, you know, the Canadian version of the Kingsman? It's like a hockey franchise, people.
I'm not sure. All right. So you were talking about Venom a little
the
bit
goalies.
Earlier. Maybe they've gone full walrus. Who knows?
Wow.
I don't know. After watching Tusk, I have a whole new, you know, view of Canada. So you mentioned Venom earlier. Well, we've got the MPAA ratings and the runtime for Venom. So this is going to sport a PG-13 rating. I'm wondering if maybe they did the PG-13 and aim for it. That way they could have Spidey making some appearance versus their beloved, coveted Spider-Man in a R-rated film.
Yeah, because it's... I mean... Venom is one of those characters. He's like a... You know, if you go like full villain version of Venom, I mean, he's like a bloody monster of a character. But if they're trying to make him kind of the anti-hero Venom, then maybe he's not as vicious as he is in some of the comic books. I mean, there has been stories where he's more of a anti-hero at times, but I mean, it's kind of just taking the you know, balls out of it. at least you know, the trailer, now you actually see Venom and he looks like Venom, because that first trailer where we had no you do a Venom trailer with no Venom in it is just kind of stupid.
Yeah, well, and I'm afraid, you know, when we got the first trailer and it didn't show the symbiote at all, you know, and then, you know, Sony came back and was like, oh, no, there's... I have a feeling that they're probably going to play more of the anti-hero, the Venom symbiote that I would love to see is probably going to take a back burner, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean...
It's going to be much more of a lead-up, lead-in, and less of the, you know, gore and what I associate Venom with.
I mean, I'd like to see them do, like, a hardcore comic movie horror film. Like, just go full horror with a Venom movie. I mean, I think that would be more interesting and definitely something new. But as, you know, Marvel and Disney kind of expand their hold on the rest of the Marvel universe, I mean, it's things are starting to come back kind of more into that, you know, family-friendly Avengers MCU than, you know, going dark.
I mean, but I'm a Tom Hardy fan. I mean, you know, I don't know. This is going to be one that I'm going to see, and I may regret that. But this should be shooting for, you know, October 5th, I think, is the release date on it.
Especially, it's coming out in October. Give us a horror movie.
All right, so we talked about Venom. Next is Spider-Man, and I've been watching some
Spider-Man
gameplay footage of you know, the PS4 exclusive here, and it actually looks like a very fun game. You know, not a super long game, but you know, if you're looking for something to get into for, you know, 10-15 hours, and you know, I hear the mechanics are really fluid. The visuals are awesome. You know, this is what a lot of people have been wanting from a Spider-Man, you know, as far as being able to fling to buildings and scale, you know, walls.
Yeah,
and
what little
else
I've seen of it reminds me a lot of, you know, the Arkham series of games, especially like the last couple where it's been a big open world game and you can kind of tackle things in your own order or whatnot. But it's you know, it's all in the daytime too. Like we're like, you know, the Arkham games are pretty much all night set because you're Batman.
It's
so
dark.
So it's easier to hide like stuff. But when you're like dealing with the brightness of day, it's like it looks like visually amazing. I mean, it kind of has to be at a different level of rendering when you're, you know, can't hide things in the darkness.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I keep hearing good things. So, you know, we'll leave it at that. Up next is something that really near and dear to my heart as a gamer. Diablo animated series is in the work at Netflix. Now, I'm a huge fan of the Diablo game franchise. Loved what Netflix did with Castlevania.
Yeah, so
there's so much lore and backstory to Diablo that would just be...
Yeah, it should be.
Amazing.
I mean, they did a good job with the Voltron series, and that the Castlevania, like the first, even though it was like a short run, that first season was good. The second season is supposed to be coming out fairly soon, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. But yeah, so I mean, most things Netflix has been putting out have been doing
and,
a real good job of.
Hellboy screenwriter Andrew Cosby is, you know, hinting that he is in the final talks as to be the writer and showrunner. So, you know, there were, you know, I couldn't talk about this a couple of weeks ago because there were so many rumors, but if his tweet holds true, you know, not only is the series actually happening, but, you know, he's in the final talks to be writer
and
showrunner. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's probably one of Blizzard's most successful and popular franchises outside, you know, maybe Warcraft, Starcraft, Overwatch. I mean, I would love another Diablo game, but, you know, I know that's probably another 5 years down the road.
Yeah, they're not ones that, like, aren't like a yearly edition. It's one you're going to definitely have to wait for with them. But, you know, it takes time to make something good.
But, I mean, you know, to be able to see, you know, I mean, Netflix has done a quality job with the other stuff, which I think it would be awesome for them to add it to the platform because I would make time.
Speaking of Netflix, we did just recently get a release date for the new season of Daredevil's coming out, I believe, October 18th. So I need to finish watching Iron Fist before then.
Yeah, I did see that apparently season 3 is happening. It was something to do. I don't remember the details.
There's kind of a teaser. I don't even know if there's a full trailer, but they have released a release date, so it's coming here in less than a month at this point, right in the middle of Halloween season.
I just with the merger and everything else, I mean, some of these shows have got to be reaching the end of their contracts before, Disney takes everything,
Yeah, because like I said, next year that Disney streaming service is coming out, so we'll see if these shows live on past then. I'm hoping we at least get a season two of Punisher before it all disappears, because I really don't want to spend any money for another streaming service, but they just announced that there's going to be more Marvel TV series, like live action TV series, on the new streaming service. They've been talking about a Loki and Scarlet Witch TV series is one of their recent announcements. So,
and I did see, tidbits of an article too, since we're talking about the Disney thing. Apparently, they've oversaturated the market with Star Wars, so they're looking to scale back some of the Star Wars stuff, which I don't necessarily feel like is a bad thing. I love Star Wars, but I get sick and tired of everything revolving around three or four characters. It's been 30 years.
I don't think it'd be as oversaturated if the product coming out didn't suck. Because Solo, I still say Solo was not a bad movie, but I think it coming out 3 months after The Last Jedi, which kind of had definitely mixed reviews, hurt it. Like, if they'd gone like they did with the Rogue One model, where we got, Episode 7, and then a year later we got Rogue One, and then a year later we got Episode 8. Yeah, if they pushed that off to, a December release instead of like coming 3 months after Last Jedi pissed everybody off, it may have had a better shot. I don't think they can do the Marvel method of three a year. Like, if you're going to stay on the same storyline, you got to space that out a little bit more and give people time to, like, get over the butt hurt and regain some hope. Because Star Wars. I went to see, but, like, friggin' most people who aren't, like, hardcore is like, fucking Last Jedi was weak. They made Luke a bitch. Like, I don't really care about seeing Solo.
Very true. Very true. And on that note, any other thoughts, tidbits, information we didn't cover?
I think that's it. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Go leave us reviews, likes, and all that good stuff. You can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at CigarNerdPod. Be sure and check out RealMenSmokeCigars.com for your cigar smoking shirts, and StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds for your energy needs. And with that, take me out to the ball game, take me out to the crowd.
It could happen.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.